Hello, podcast listeners. Jordan River here. Thank you for tuning in to Growcast today. I have the first of a two-parter. You're going to get a little bonus Growcast this week. That's right. We have Shane from MyGrow. MyGrow is an LED company, but Shane is awesome because he also has a YouTube channel where he tests all sorts of different lights and does all these different experiments. It's really exciting. So this is a two-parter. The first part here, we talk about a lot of different things, actually. Light technology, we talk about UV light. We get into some kind of ancillary, weirder stuff in part one, and it's really, really strong. And then part two, we actually talk about his tests. We talk about light spectrums more and actual brands and the tests that he ran on these brands and what those tests told him. So it's a really, really strong two-parter. We're doing a lot on lights lately, and I'm really excited about it. So this is going to kind of round out that whole talk. And then you get your normal episode coming Saturday/Sunday too. So a little bit of bonus Growcast this week. Before we jump into part one with Shane from MyGrow, let's give a little love to our sponsor, Humble Garden Lenses, everyone. Just go to humblegarden.co. Promo code GROWCAST gets you 15% off your smartphone filter lenses. And members of MyGrowPass.com, our membership program, get 25% off their Humble Garden Lenses. You've seen these guys. That's right. If you grow under HPS bulbs, you know that taking photos of your garden can be tricky. In fact, it ruins your photos because of that weird light spectrum. Well, Humble Garden, they took the same technology in light-correcting glasses and applied it to your phone's camera. With their clip-on HPS smartphone filter, you can take crisp and balanced photos of your garden and showcase it the way it was meant to be seen, everybody. So if you grow under HPS lights, you're going to need these guys. Go to humblegarden.co. Growcast is the promo code for 15% off for you listeners, and members of mygrowpass.com get 25% off. All right, everyone, let's start with Shane and stay tuned for part two. Really excited for this episode, everyone. Thank you all so much for listening. Enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to Growcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, please tell a friend, a grower, about Growcast. Share the show. It helps us out a lot. Check out Rob Smith's show, The Homegrown Helpers, and my new show, The Coffee, Health, and Science Podcast. Give us a listen over there, guys. It's really, really fun. Let's see, who do we have today? I'm really excited to speak with today's guest. He's a lighting expert. He's got an awesome YouTube channel, as well as a LED light company. Shane from MyGrow LEDs is on the line. How you doing, Shane?
Hi, Jordan. Doing very well. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us all the way across the pond, right?
Yeah, we're based in Dublin, Ireland, in the European Union.
That is so cool, man. Tell me about MyGrow. Tell me what your mission is with MyGrow.
Yeah, so I started MyGrow, it's nearly 5 years ago now. And it really came out of an experience, which I think a lot of growers who've been around for a little while will have experienced, which is buying some terrible lights and having a... you know, questioning myself and my capabilities and, you know, what am I doing wrong here? And having an engineering and manufacturing background, dig into it a little bit. And I started to get interested in photons and spectrum and LEDs and all that kind of stuff. And around the same time, we were going through a big downturn here in Ireland, particularly in construction.
Oh, that's right.
And then... yeah, so I got I'm calling it an opportunity now. It wasn't really an opportunity at the time, but I got made redundant from the company I'd worked for some time.
Oh, boy.
And yeah, but in retrospect, it was a great opportunity. It put me out there to start something up by myself. And, you know, I sort of put two and two together and started MyGrow.
I love it.
And here I am.
MyGrowLight.com, MyGrowLight.com, and then also the MyGrow YouTube channel, MyGrow. You do a lot of cool stuff on this YouTube channel, man, and I want to dive into the testing and all the specifics when it comes to light specifically, but why don't you give my listeners a little overview of the YouTube channel and what they can find there?
Yeah, so again, it was started a few years ago to really as sort of a to add some interest to the website, the company website, and I hadn't intended to do a huge amount on it, but what I was trying to do at the time there was a lot of, you know, HID or HPS versus LED sort of stuff. And what I was trying to do was to show people clearly what is the difference between buying a high-end and admittedly expensive LED versus the tried and tested and admittedly very good value for money high-pressure sodium system.
Sure.
And I was trying to figure out how to do that effectively. And I started to look at other YouTube channels, and I got very interested in basically communicating the differences in spectrum and communicating the differences in light output from different fixtures. And I came up with the formula, which was to test the lights in as fair an environment as possible. And what I mean by that is to hang it at the optimum hanging height, to put it in a reflective environment where, you know, any of the light that goes stray is going to be reflected back, and to do a repeatable
split test. With everything's optimal. Not only is it a split test where everything's the same, but you're not doing this in some crappy grow. You're doing it where everything is optimal.
Exactly. Now, I'm not doing it over a grow test. I'm just the
lights themselves.
Just the physical output, the photon output, or the light output of the fixture.
That's so cool.
In its designed environment. So, you know, if it's in a 2-foot by 2-foot or a 4-foot by 2-foot or whatever that is, hang it at an optimum height, and then showing one light, comparing one light against the other, and helping people, I hope, to make sensible decisions when they're buying a light.
I love it, man, because that's really the trouble. There are so many options out there. There are so many growers posting pictures that they're killing it with crappy ones, or maybe they're like, you see someone who's failing with an LED, and you're like, who am I supposed to trust? What am I supposed to, you know, trust is the truth? So I love when someone can tune into a YouTube channel and actually see videos, extended videos of tests. So I love it. And everyone can find MiGrow at MIGROlight.com if you want to check out their lights. But I like what you're doing testing everyone's lights, man. You're just kind of putting info out there in the space and pushing this whole thing along. So why don't we move into LED technology a little bit? It seems to me like they've come so far since I first saw them enter the market. And that's what everyone was telling me on this show. They're going to get smaller. They're going to get cheaper. They're going to get more powerful. The technology law with computers has a similar effect. You know, computers are always getting smaller, more powerful, cheaper. Is that kind of what happened to LEDs, and where are they headed?
Yeah, it has. So going back a few years, LEDs, let's take 5-6 years ago, when I would have looked at them first, and LEDs, if you invested a large amount of money, and I mean 6 or 7 times the amount of the equivalent HPS system, you could get an LED system which was more efficient than HPS just.
Right.
So, now, it would have longer lifespan and a few other sort of benefits like that, but up to about 6-7 years ago, LEDs were just about on a par with HPS. Remembering that HPS is the most efficient type of HID lighting out there.
Oh, interesting. That's fascinating, because a lot of people love these CMHs and the effects they have on their plant, but they're not as efficient.
They're marginally. So as a system, take, for example, the peak probably of HPS at the moment. So let's take a Gavita 1,000-watt, 400-volt, double-ended, et cetera.
Yep, you know it.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're amazing fixtures. So we get one of those, we put them up on a test, and I've optimized them and recorded them at about 1.4 micromoles per watt. So this is like miles per hour. It's the amount of output over the input, or miles per gallon, I should say. So the output is power light, and it's not just power light flying out in every direction. It's the amount that you can actually get down to where the plants are, the plant canopy is. And if you measure that output over input for high pressure sodium, you'll get 1.4 units of useful light for every unit of electricity that you put in.
That's so cool.
If you compare that against a CMH, mm-hmm. it's very, very close.
Interesting.
Now on a lower wattage, so you take a 400 or 600 watt HPS, single-ended, regular digital ballast, medium quality reflector, it'll be about 1.2, mm-hmm. so about 15% less. So there is a difference between a...
That is fascinating.
You know, a middle of the road HPS or middle to high end HPS,
right.
And CMH would be about 15% better than that. But when you get to the high end HPS, they are about the same as CMH. I'm not talking about spectrum now and light quality. I'm just talking about the horsepower.
Yeah, pure conversion rates here.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's something I like to get into early on because it can be very confusing to people, and there's lots of there's lots of hypothesis.
Yeah, right, and a lot of like random factors, right? Like what you're saying is HPS isn't better than CMH. If you say those words, people are going to jump all over you because of what you're saying, which is the spectrum affects the plants differently. Maybe the heat output will be useful to save energy if you're not cooling your room as much. There's a lot of different factors, but what you're looking at is just in a vacuum conversion electricity to light.
Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes efficiency, people don't care about it because they're plugging in, they got
right.
free.
Yeah, it's just not one of their values of their grow.
Like you say, they could be growing in northern Canada and they want the heat. They don't want high efficiency LEDs with no heat. So it's all horses for courses.
I love that.
It's trying to provide the objective, accurate information for people to go and make the decision that suits them for their situation.
So cool, man. So that's what I've observed as far as the LED technology progressing. And to me, that means that this is kind of the future. Is there an end in sight when it comes to LEDs? Are they just going to continue to get cheaper and more powerful?
Well, if you take, so about 5 or 6 years ago, they were about on par. And then about 3 years ago, 3 to 4 years ago, people started moving away from the Blurple panels, the red and blue.
Yes.
And they started.
They looked so cool, Shane. I like the way that grows looked under them. But my understanding is that they're not as efficient.
They can be efficient, but many of them are not. Mm. And in fact, it's cheaper now per watt to provide white lighting, which has the potential to be much higher in efficiency. So I would be recording and testing and recording some of the highest efficiency fixtures now on the market. So I would have had Fluence and some of the horticultural lighting group products and that type of thing. Those guys are pushing out 2.2 micromoles per watt. Hmm. And so that now is a very significant increase in efficiency over HPS.
Right.
And that is where you're starting to get into multiple benefits then. So the fixture cost has reduced, your energy consumption is reduced, your heat output, and therefore the amount of energy you need to treat that heat is reduced in hotter climates. The lifespan of the fixture is much longer, so you're not swapping out bulbs and you're not having performance reductions
right.
due to the depreciation, all that stuff. If I was going to summarize it up, if you take the economics out of it, it's a lot easier for a lot of people to grow with LED. They switch on and off with a simple switch. You don't have to have all the fancy stuff that you have to have with starters and all that with
ballast and yeah.
You don't have a bulb burning at 400 degrees, well, that's centigrade, but a very high temperature inside your house, often sometimes in your basement or in your bedroom or in your attic, which
right.
can be disconcerting. And I don't know, I was listening to one of your previous podcasts, just a one from a few weeks ago, and you're talking about you hadn't heard about LEDs.
Catching fire, is that what you're going to say?
Yeah.
Talk to me about that, please, because I saw someone on the internet kind of slanging info like he was some sort of electrician genius, and he said these Chinese LED lights are unsafe. And I thought to myself, I've heard of plenty of people burning down their houses with a normal grow light. What do you think of the ability to catch fire for an LED or a cheap LED?
Fairly low risk, generally.
That makes sense.
So the rumors that would have been going around, for example, that fans would die out. Fans generally would just keep spinning and spinning. You know, they now if you do have a lot of dust and moisture, you could be affecting the lifespan of them.
Right.
But a lot of them will spin and spin, as we know, because we have PCs on our desk that are clogged up with dust and dirt and gunge
right.
for years. And we never clean them out, and they're still running. So
true.
You know, we know that. With the lighting itself, it's much less likely to have a fire due to the fixture setting something else alight.
Oh, that, right. That is, as opposed to like combusting itself.
Yeah, that's unlikely. The surface temperatures around them are not high enough, and they often have simple protection in them that if they overvolt or overcurrent, that they'll shut down themselves. That's not an expensive feature. What I have found with some of them is just cheap wiring, cheap plugs, cheap sockets, not proper protection on the fuses and stuff like that. But to be honest, I haven't heard of any, and I haven't seen any particularly dangerous LED grow lights. And I've tested, you know,
many.
It's into the hundreds now. And in terms of the fact this Chinese element, you know, I get LEDs. We import our LEDs from a company called Luminous. They and Cree and Bridgelux and everybody else pretty much makes their LEDs in China. And
that's just the scare tactic. They're coming from China no matter what, is what you're saying.
Pretty much.
Right. Because that's where manufacturing happens.
Yeah, yeah. The reality is you get what you pay for, and if you pay for cheap stuff, you know, usually corners are cut some way.
Right.
But it's rare that they would be dangerous because, you know, they just wouldn't be allowed. They wouldn't be around for so long. And a lot of the cheap manufacturers we see online, and when I say cheap, sorry, I shouldn't even say it. It's a derogatory term. A lot of the
inexpensive
lights, yeah. That are on Amazon now, for example, you know, they've been there for years.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there were really bad problems with reliability and that kind of thing, for one, we'd be seeing the comments, but we'd also probably be seeing these companies stop trading. You know?
True.
So I don't prescribe to the sort of scaremongering around.
I love that, man.
Less expensive lights. I wouldn't, there's a place for everything, you know.
I like that a lot, and it's good to hear that coming from someone who tests a bunch of lights, because that was kind of my initial thought, but I don't want to go and start saying a bunch of stuff and then have somebody buy one and, you know, run into trouble. But seeing as how you've tested so many and that's your estimation, very interesting. I like that a lot. Let's move on, though. Let's talk about UV testing. Now, I know you're not really testing UV's effects on cannabis, but you are testing the implementation of UV's ultraviolet light into light fixtures, no?
Yes, I am. So I, you know, as I said to you first, I'm an engineer primarily, but I'm also just very interested and a curious person about things generally. And the interface of sort of physics and biology, and this mainly happens when we talk about spectrum, is a really fascinating area. It's developing quite fast. There's a lot of very new and interesting information coming out almost monthly into the space. And I'm sorry, Jordan, there's some noise in the background. Is that...
I can't pick it up right now. You sound okay.
Okay, fine. Sorry.
Well, we'll power through.
Yeah, it is a factory, so there is disturbance in the background.
You sound good right now, so let's roll.
Okay, so yeah, I enjoy the mixing of you know, the two disciplines, the physics and the biology. I've been studying it quite a lot, and... Mm. There's a lot of myth and rumor out there about, you know, what is good or bad or better or worse for indoor grow lighting in terms of spectrum. And I'm on a sort of long-term self-improvement path or discovery path of trying to understand this insofar as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the aspects, you know, the two ends of the spectrum that are least known about in terms of growing is UV at one end and far-red at the other end.
Infrared at the other end?
Far-red.
Far-red, okay. So the far-red spectrum.
Yeah, so far red is just after red, and you have to go quite a bit for infrared, really. So far red is sort of what we would consider when we're talking about grow lighting and spectrum. But there is less known about those, and therefore there's quite a lot of studies going into those areas at the moment.
Interesting.
I'm intrigued by it. I'm talking to a company in the UK who manufactures UV grow lights for commercial applications, and I'm actually visiting them on Thursday to see a hemp medical facility. They're growing CBD or producing CBD, and they're using UV to enhance the potency there.
Wow.
But it's UV, which is not available generally in grow lights, effectively because you can't deliver it. This is UVB, not UVA, and there's quite a difference between them. So UVA is a lower energy, closer to blue part of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. It has some effect on plant growth, but it's not responsible for the effect that most people are looking for, which is improved potency. It's further down the spectrum. The UVB is what researchers are showing is responsible for these potential increases in potency. And UVB you can't get it from LEDs, not effectively, not practically.
Oh wow, interesting. How would you get those? What kind of fixtures are providing UVB light?
Yeah, so I've been through extensive testing, and so in effect, glass blocks UVB. A regular glass.
Oh wow, interesting.
Yeah, so your HID fixtures, your metal halides and stuff, they will have an element of UVA, but not UVB. The economic and most practical source of it for the smaller grower is fluorescent tubing.
Ah, I see. Exposed fluorescent tubing doesn't have that glass.
It has glass, but it has glass which can facilitate UVB passing through it.
Interesting.
It's got elements of quartz in it, which give it a structure which allows the UVB photons to get through.
Oh, that makes sense. Is that why it looks like white glass? Is it the quartz in it?
No, actually. Funny enough, the white is actually all fluorescent tubing has a phosphorus coating on the inside, which is the white sort of painted. Painted inside. And what happens in a fluorescent tube generally is that inside there is mercury, which is energized with a plasma, and that emits UV photons, and those UV photons inside the tube bounce or run into the phosphorus coating. Mm-hmm. And they actually make the phosphorus coating glow in other colors.
Whoa.
It's like a secondary effect, the phosphorus glowing. And in UVB fluorescence, they just have a very low quantity of that phosphorus in it. So quite often they will have a small amount of visible light coming out from this small lining of phosphorus, but they're allowing quite a lot of the UV photons to come through.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so they're just sort of tweaked in a certain direction to preference the UV photons getting through the glass rather than being having to pass through this phosphorus and producing other colors of visible light.
That's fascinating. So you're saying that this is not implementable or hard to implement into LED lights. Is this going to be like a supplemental thing? Do you see if this is in fact effective? I know you are looking to see some more tests and maybe some growers who are willing to do like a side-by-side test, but is it going to be like a supplemental thing? Like you got your grow light and then you have your UVB supplementer?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So the research that I've read and the people that I've talked to have pretty much all said that the UV, the greatest benefit you can get from the UVB is actually in the latter stages of flowering. That in the earlier stages, certainly through veg growth, it can actually retard growth. So it can actually reduce the rate. Yeah. So it's not desirable in the veg stage. And in the early stage of flower, you are putting a lot of mass on at that stage too, a lot of bulk on the plant, and therefore you don't want to slow that down with UV. And so it's the latter stages of flowering. So it could be the last couple of weeks for autos and the last 3 or 4 weeks for photos. And you would be dosing it with a amount of UV radiation per day. So not continuously through the day cycle, even just for a few hours. And, you know, you could be talking, from what I've figured out, you could be talking, you know, for less than $100, you could be dosing your, say, 4 foot by 4 foot effectively. And, you know, you wouldn't have to be replacing that tube for years, you know, because you'd be using it for only maybe hundreds of hours for any grow, you know, less. Right. So, you know, the potential to get a increase in, you know, the desired output is basically THC and CBD. Everything else is a waste, you know, if we think of it like that. So, you know, although we like to have bulk on the plants, you know, bulk is great, but it's, for example, if it's at the expense of potency.
Right.
Yeah, so not a huge outlay in terms of new equipment, for a relatively low expense in terms of extra energy or space or any of those other kind of factors in your grow setup, there is a potential, and I emphasize here, it is a potential of 20 to 40% improvement, which is the feedback I've had from...
Jeez.
So from commercial growers using this in a controlled environment, it appears that there is this potential. So, you know, given that being the case, I think it's worth my while. I've been skeptical about it before, but since talking to a number of commercial growers, I think you have to be skeptical with a lot of stuff you hear as a grower, and being online and forums and stuff like that.
Sure.
You know, you got to. I think it's the wise person waits to see some evidence and see some sort of A and B testing or some comparisons from a reliable source with no sort of
bias or alter your motive 100%.
You know, to avoid the marketing sort of research, but so it's just a rabbit hole that I've been doing.
It's really cool, man. All right, before we jump back in with Shane, let's give a little love to Greencraft Distribution, our sponsor today. Go to greencraftdistribution.com. Promo code GROWCAST gets you 10% off. And members of mygrowpass.com get 25% off site-wide. Greencraft Distribution is a New England-based online hydro superstore representing several hydroponic brands as well as premium CBD products. Check out greencraftdistribution.com to see the full line of products from brands like Kushly, Canatai, Stash Logics, and more. They've got some premium quality CBD products and a lot of great grow gear, everybody. And they're always adding new stuff on. So check out their line of nutrients and everything they got going on. Promo code GROWCAST for 10% off just for listening to this show. And save 25% at the Hydro Superstore when you become a member at mygrowpass.com. All right, everyone. Greencraft Distribution, check it out. Let's get back to Shane with MyGrow. Yeah, well, let's talk about if someone wants to incorporate it into their grow. Do you have any brand recommendations or things like that for people who want to implement UVB?
Yeah, so the I went through a lot of the sort of DIY type solutions first. I looked at reptile bulbs. I looked at cheap Amazon CFL black lights and that type of thing. And very few of them, or none of them, deliver UVB effectively. So I went to the specialist bulbs, the AgroMax, HTG AgroMax, the Solacures, Philips broadband UV bulbs. Mm. And these ones have anywhere between 3 and 12% UVB output per watt, which is very good. And I've tested those and put their results and some of the sort of specifications up on some recent YouTube videos. And hopefully in those videos, there's enough information for people to be able to, you know, source the equipment to set it up optimally. and to at least be able to try it out for themselves and test it. Just a caveat to that is I have some concerns over using those bulbs because, in short, you can I think there's UVC coming from them, and UVC is quite dangerous. So I've put up a safety video there as well, just to say to people, you know, use these with caution. So for example, have them on timers so they come on and off when you're not in the grow room.
Wow. We need to be thinking about this radiation is what you're saying.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And the reason is it's very simple. I can smell ozone from the tubes.
Wow.
So, I don't know if you're familiar, but, ozone, is that, gas that's up in the upper atmosphere.
Right.
And ozone is what we, is actually generated by UVC, impacting regular oxygen and splitting it apart and reconfigurating it into O3. But if you can smell ozone, and it has that sort of funny fresh air smell, is the way I've just heard it described. It smells a little bit like chlorine in the air.
Wow.
It's very distinctive. And if you smell it, it means that there is a UVC particles, you know, photons in the air, and UVC is basically what's used in, you know, in treatment plants and to kill things.
Wow.
So UVC destroys cells, and, you know, will kill, you know, bugs and pathogens and all that type of stuff. So I'm just saying to your listeners, you know, just if you're going to do it, watch the video by all means on how to set up, but please also take note of the safety guidance that goes
along. Wow, man. That is definitely some eye-opening stuff. Everyone check it out at my Grow YouTube page, MIGRO. Really cool stuff, man. Before we sign off here, we're having some technical difficulties. I would love to go longer, but let's get this last question in. I want to talk about the effectiveness of all these cheap LED lights. Because like you said, there's lots of reputable brands out there selling very expensive ones. But, and I feel like a couple years ago, a lot of the cheap Amazon ones, people were saying these are crap. But now I see a lot of people crushing it with like these quantum boards, for instance. I saw your tests up on a grower Facebook group. Someone must have reposted them. Shout out to Brad in the Cannabis Growers Resource Group. That's how I found your stuff. What do you think about these really, really cheap ones? Why do I see some people crushing with these like bull crap LEDs while other people say they're not so good? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, funny enough, I've got four lights here on the bench to test for, they're sort of main grow lights available from Amazon. And they range from we were talking about efficiency earlier. So if you remember the sort of break, the level that LEDs really need to be exceeding in order to justify their existence over HPS or HID is 1.4, at least 1.2, 1.3. And of all the four grow lights I've got from Amazon, they're all very good value for money. They're inexpensive, but none of them are better than HID. So they will all be less efficient than HID. Now, some people don't care about that, as I said before. They're not that concerned. They're not going to be using the light for that long. And the way the analogy I use is often about using cars. If you're going to purchase a motor car, you know, a lot of it depends on how you're going to use it and what you're going to use it for.
What's the intent? That's 100% right.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you take, for example, efficiency, if you're going to use that car every day, do really long mileage in it, you're going to go into, you know, exposed remote places, you're going to want, first of all, an efficient vehicle, because you're not going to want to buy a cheap car up front and then spend a fortune on fuel. And you know, grow lights, we run anywhere from 12 to, you know, if you're on autos, it could be 20 hours a day or even 24, some people.
Right.
So the return on investment on buying a more efficient light, if you're growing every day all year, is in some cases less than a year. So you know, you can buy your cheap stuff, but you will end up paying for it somehow.
Right.
if you're using it all the time. So it's but you know, if that's what you can afford and that's the money you have in your pocket and you want to get started, you know, do it. Get going. The only other thing I would say about those lights is they don't provide accurate information generally about what their output is.
Interesting.
And so, you know, I have a Viper Spectra hanging up here for test. It's a Viper Spectra of 450 watt is what's on it. Now, it consumes 200 watts, and it would be, so it's, you know, what's that about? And then you get to how much it would be equivalent to in HPS. And because it's less efficient than HPS, it's actually equivalent to about 150 watt HPS.
Oh, wow.
So it's badged as 450 watts, but it's pulling 200 watts from the wall. But it's delivering far less than it's claiming to deliver.
And wow.
What that can lead to is just simple disillusionment and underperformance, or the other way around. So I would just suggest to people that if you're going to buy a light, just try and be aware of what the output of that light is, and that should be described in what's called a PAR chart or PAR map, which is where the manufacturer hangs the light over a test area and shows you what the PAR output is of that lamp over its
footprint.
Specified.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they can cut. Now, a lot of them do a center point measurement, which is useless because they're just picking one point and giving you one up.
Interesting.
And that's always the point which is in the center, which is the highest point. you want to see how it performs over the whole grow area.
Interesting.
And that's what I've sort of dedicated the YouTube channel to. And so people can get a good feel for, you know, if I spend $100 on a light or I spend $200 on a light, what am I actually getting an output that's different? You know, what is the difference between the two of them?
100%.
Yeah.
I love it, man. And that's why you got to keep doing this website, because when people post in forums or when people write me and say, you know, which light do I buy? I heard this, this, and this. I love to refer to a deeper resource and a deeper expert like yourself. Let's wrap up on one question here, man. A term that's flying around right now that's very popular: Cree COBs. What are COB LEDs? What are Cree COBs, and why do you like them or not like them?
Yeah, so we use COBs in our fixtures. COBs, they're called chip on board, which doesn't really help with understanding what the hell they are.
But is that what it is? It's a microchip sitting on the motherboard?
Yeah, it's a lot of little LED chips sitting all grouped together and gathered together in a concentrated area. Mm. So where we have, there's two or three versions of LED lights now. There's the panel lights. So they're a big white panel generally with lots of different small LEDs on them spread out. There's then strip lights. So the same LEDs generally are just arrayed in a linearly, you know, so one after
thin,
the other
long strip, yeah.
And then there's the COB ones, where you get a similar number of LEDs. You just group them up into this small concentrated area.
Oh, like little clusters.
Yeah. So it you can have a 100 watt light that's spread over, you know, a foot by a foot and a half. You can have a 100 watt light that is concentrated into something which is only, you know, an inch in diameter.
Whoa.
So it's two ways of solving the same problem, which is how to get as much light as possible down onto your grow as efficiently as possible. And the format, the Cree COB format, Cree is just like a, you know, it's like Hoover's art of vacuum cleaners.
A brand,
It's a very popular brand. They're a high performance and good quality brand. But Cree COB grow light, or as we use, a luminous COB grow light, is just one of these fixtures where there's a lot of wattage concentrated in a relatively small space. And to some people find that preferable because they can direct it around easier. Often they're nicely sealed up. Often they're passive, so the cooling is not from fans. And often you can seal them up. Like ours are IP67 rated, so they're submersible. You have, you know, the great thing about LEDs now these days is you've got lots of choices.
And, yeah, no kidding.
Lots of, And, you know, if you like a format, there's plenty of companies in that space. You're going to deliver lots of different variances of that format at different sort of value points and that type of thing. And yeah, CreeCobs are just one of those good options out there.
So cool, man. Listen, I feel like we could dive further. I think this was a great overview episode. You really explained a lot from like a bird's eye view. Maybe we can do another one down the road talking about specific brands and kind of compiling a lot of your results into one podcast episode. Would you be interested in that?
I'd be absolutely delighted to do
that. That was awesome, man. Shane, listen, it was a pleasure speaking with you. I love speaking with people across the pond. I love Irish people. It's really great for you to take the time and do this. You really didn't have to. I just reached out to you randomly and you said, sure. So I appreciate that a lot. And my listeners do as well.
That's what we're here to do, to share the knowledge. And, you know, anything I can do generally and for the community, I often find comes back at me, you know, in multiple times.
Yes. So you're speaking my language.
Yeah. It's about, you know, helping each other out, and we'll all sort of grow and move on and develop together.
Love it, man. Everybody listening, MyGrow, MIGRO on YouTube, MyGrowLight.com. Check it out. Shout out to Brad K on the groups for putting this interview together, even though he probably didn't know he did it. Let's see here. What else do we got? Do you have any social media, anything you want to give out to follow like that?
Yeah, we've got YouTube is the main channel. We've also got an Instagram, so it's at MyGrowLight. Our Instagram and Facebook. Love to help out. I get lots of queries and questions about grow lighting generally, not just about our products, but about everything. I try to answer all the queries every day, every morning. So if you
it's a tough task.
Yeah, well, you know, it's again, I do it, I get kudos from it. People, you know, it adds value to the brand, adds value to the company, and it's how we've got to where we are. So we're going to continue doing it, you know.
Love it, man.
So please get in touch, leave a comment, DM me, and we'll try and help you out with your lighting query.
Lovely. Everyone, follow at Growcast on Instagram. Follow the show there. Follow me at Jordan River IG if you want to talk to me directly. This is Shane from MyGrow and Jordan River wishing you the best of luck in your grow, everybody. Stay tuned for more GrowCast coming your way. One more time, Shane. Thanks so much, buddy.
Thank you.
All right, everyone listening, be safe and grow smarter. All right, everyone, that's our show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Stay tuned for part two coming shortly, and then we will return to our regularly scheduled program. Let's see here. Shout out to Start2Finish. Start the number 2, finish 710 on Instagram for all your cannabis consultation needs. Jay Blanked did the beat for the ads. Find him at soundcloud.com/JayBlanked. You can find our merch at growcastpodcast.com/merch. There's a sale going on. That's right, everybody. Check out the merch sale. Just go to growcastpodcast.com and click merch. All right, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in today. We'll see you next time. Happy growing out there, everybody.